Hello, I'm Ian Stone. Welcome to the show. So as we contemplate these long football-free summer months, thank you, Sepp Blatter, for the World Cup having to be played in the winter. Well, we thought we'd wring every last drop out of the remaining weeks of the season, because the football's on. Yes, this is the football show that likes to launch it long, put our foot in and get in the mixer. This week we'll be talking league titles, terrible statues and strange protests. We'll have quizzes and at some point this evening, someone watching will win a huge prize. Nothing to do with us, I think it's the Euro Millions draw later this evening. Joining us this week, it's the nation's favourite contemporary dancer, Mark Steele, and a man wearing a slightly looser shirt than the one he wore on Question Time last week. It's comedian Jeff Norcott. Good evening, chaps.
Good evening.
Jeff, what have you noticed this week?
Well, I've noticed comedians on topical political panel shows should wear loose. Look, the shirt fitted fine. I was just, according to my wife who picked the shirt, I hadn't made the necessary adjustments before sitting back in it. But you know me. It was fun as ever being on Question Time. But I'm very buoyed up this week on a footballing level because on Monday night, AFC Wimbledon announced we got a new manager. He's called Johnny Jackson, which just sounds frankly made up. Just sounds like it's the cheapest way to employ a manager. Just make someone up.
JJ.
Sounds like a Spitfire pilot, doesn't he? Johnny Jackson swoops in. And I'd say the most important thing about Johnny Jackson is he's really good looking. And in life, it's not fair, but looks count. Looks count. And if League Two is decided on symmetrical features and a good jawline, we're going up.
What do you think? 9 out of 10, would you say?
I'd give him a straight 9, which sounded way more euphemistic than it should have.
This week of all weeks. Yeah. What about you, Mark? What have you got for us?
No, I love the idea of good-looking managers. I think, we all love Patrick Vieira at the Palace, but when he eventually goes, I suppose Bradley Cooper, maybe, to take over. That'd be good. So what's the question? What have I noticed? I noticed this, right? And it's not maybe not an original observation, but when I was listening to a phone-in on the radio after the football on whatever night, Sunday night, and there were two people that rang in, and I thought how interesting that was, because a bloke from Manchester City rang in as angry as anyone you have ever heard, because some people say that Liverpool are a bigger club than Manchester City, and it's not fair, right? Because while they won one trophy in the last 17 years, and I'm sick of it, they're bloody thing, and all that. And he was angry. And then there was a bloke from Boston who was utterly delirious because they had got to the final of the Northern League playoffs where they're going to play York. Absolutely ecstatic. And I thought, the enjoyment and pleasure you get from supporting a football club has no relation to how successful they are. This bloke from Manchester City was in a total rage. I'm sure he has no friends. I'm sure his neighbours all... I bet the property prices around his place, you can probably buy a house for about 40 quid because you have to live near to this angry idiot. And the Boston man was just so cheerful. I know that obviously it makes the difference if your team wins or loses, but how big it is has no bearing at all on how much happiness you derive from following football. Look at me and Jeff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cheerful souls.
As opposed to me after Monday night. But anyway, yeah.
Exactly.
We'll get to that. And by the way, Mark, I did notice when you came and said hello, you said to commiserations to Jeff for what's happened to his football team.
Yes.
But you didn't offer commiserations for the fact that we finished fifth.
Yeah, well, that's because I think commiserations isn't a sufficient word. I've been writing a poem and a card, and I've got some friends to sing a song that I hope will convey the sheer scale of desolation that we all feel, that all reasonable people feel, no matter what else in their life. I know that lots of people in Ukraine have said, well, that really puts our perspectives into the trifles that they are.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, that told me. So, at at the top of the Premier League. Barring miracles on Sunday, it looks very much like Manchester City are going to win the title. Mark, Man City, would they be worthy winners, do you think?
Well, yeah, they deserve to win because they've been the best side and got the most points and all that. But I don't know. I think most people, if you've got to choose, would prefer Liverpool, really, because Liverpool's a club with history and a sense of community, and it's sort of based in Liverpool, and it's not just been bought from outside and so on. So yeah. I would rather Liverpool won it, and also I think Klopp is a great figure. I think it's that the image he creates is a bit false, because I think he's really, really hard, and I think once he gets sort of away from the cameras, the cap comes off, and he's really tough, obviously. But yeah, you can't help like Klopp, so I suppose I prefer Liverpool. But Manchester City, yeah, they're worthy winners, aren't they?
I get it.
In the same way that you might go, Vladimir Putin is a worthy winner. His tanks were stronger than Zelensky's if he manages to win Ukraine, but it wouldn't mean it would be the right or popular.
Yeah, we're not, by the way, on BT Sport, comparing Manchester City to Vladimir Putin. I should point that out.
I know
what you mean, though, Mark. I love watching Man City, but it's hard to get excited about something that's so expensive. You know, it's a bit like swooning over Bugatti Veyron, isn't it? Well, it does 0-60 in 1.5 seconds. Well, it should do. It cost £1 million.
Yeah. No, they are brilliant. And De Bruyne is amazing. Is wonderful to watch. And those passes that go in a curl and exactly in the right place, you know, and everything. It's like, you know, marvellous.
Yeah. Jeff, Riyad Mahrez missed a penalty at West Ham. It's one of those areas where they're just not very, very good. What's going on? I mean, these are some of the best ball strikers in the world. 12 yards out, they lose their minds.
Well, I think he did that literally so that pundits could say it was another twist in the title race. As we all know, it's not. That doesn't represent a twist. I don't think a very good team going and playing a good team and it ended as a score draw, probably statistically the second most likely outcome, is a twist. I think a twist is if, like, Pep Guardiola turned out to be Nick Faldo. I think that's a twist. Well, I did not see that coming. And I'll be honest, when it comes down to, like, who wins the league, I don't want any of them to win the league. I think as you get older, and as you say, you know, like, as Mark rightly says about gratitude within football, they're all privileged, entitled. There's another word there, but you got Man City, right? It's all about money. Liverpool fans, pretty insufferable once they start winning. You know, Chelsea, a lot of baggage there. Spurs are very entitled. Arsenal fans just moan too much. You just think, the last time that I actually wanted any team to win the Premiership was Leicester, and even then, they got a bit above themselves. So, I just don't think there should be a winner. I think they all deserve to suffer.
Oh, it should be like maybe the cycling after all the drugs things were found, and they just decide that none of those.
Yes, the money years of football are just obsolete.
Yeah.
The money years of football, the last 30 years, is what you're saying. I quite enjoyed some of them.
What a great film, though, when Pep Guardiola turns out to be Nick Faldo.
If it wasn't for you pesky journalists, I'd have got away with it.
Ian Woosnam would be worse, though, wouldn't it? To be fair,
it would. Well, I think Ian Woosnam, that would be the twister slightly lower down the league, if you know what I mean. There'd be a series of reveals going down in terms of who won majors.
What about this then, Mark? Mark Noble played his last West Ham home game. A great club professional. One club. Who's going to tidy the dressing room now? He sweeps up, doesn't he, after every game?
Hey.
No, that wasn't a joke.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Actually, oh, please, give me more credit, for goodness sake. I'm really upset that you thought that was an attempt at a gag. No, he gets a broom and he tidies up the dressing room.
Yeah, I know he does. I don't know how many of them the other ones do. They probably do. I think they've got more sort of... more community-minded in recent years, the footballers. I think it's sort of 10, 15 years ago that you'd have had the era of the really arrogant ones and the ones that would sort of say, no, I would chuck their boots at some sort of young a trainee and go clean them and make sure they're sparkling and all that sort of thing. I think there's less of that now. They seem to be more sort of socially minded and stuff now, I think. So I think they'll probably all be fighting over the broom and stuff and making sure that the broom has been locally sourced.
I reckon that they've got brand analysts standing there just going, look, Mark, we've crunched the numbers here and the broom thing is working out really well. Serious spike on Insta here. It's part of the modern duty. It does make me laugh though, because they're still ridiculously rich and arguably probably twice as rich as those players that we're talking about 15 years ago. But they've all managed to cultivate this image. Well, I'm just a nice humble guy. I've got to say, even in that photo, he didn't look like a guy that knew literally one end of a broom from the other. He's wearing like a $5,000 suit going, oh, I'm sweeping up though. Have a look at that, sweeping.
That'd be very funny if David Moyes come in and go, Mark, that's really, really good of you to do it. Don't tell him he's used the wrong end. He's made it worse. He just pushed all the mud about.
Mark, as for Liverpool, we'll talk about, I mean, Jeff has made his feelings very clear about Liverpool in the last show that he was on. And obviously his tour is selling well, I believe. Mm. I mean, it is hard to dislike them, isn't it?
I find it hard to dislike them. But I think it's because it is at least sort of connected to the city. And I've been up at Liverpool when it's been a home game, and I've been up there a few times when Palace have played and stuff. And it's exciting. Now, the middle of the city there, there is a buzz about it. And you think, no, this is real. It does sort of belong to the city. I do agree with Jeff about the fans can be insufferable, but I think that is true. And I think that's not true with sort of certain other of the big clubs. It's a very different feeling. It's not really something that's tied to an area. It's something that's just a global brand, and that happens to be, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. It's a bit like, nobody thinks of champagne as coming from the champagne area. It's just a global name, and Chelsea's like that, isn't it, really? And sort of Manchester United increasingly. Yeah. So, I think Liverpool is cemented in the area, and I really like the city and stuff, but... Yeah, having said all that, I'm not going to. Having said all that, the last time Liverpool were in this situation, they came to Palace, went 3-0 up, and ended up drawing 3-3. And I thought it was one of the most hilarious things ever. And my son took a picture of Suarez, who was crying right in front of him, and that was the picture on his mobile phone for 10 years. So,
yeah. Well, so
I'm not that much of a Liverpool fan.
Well, this is what I was going to ask, because Pep Guardiola, Jeff, he tweeted about how everyone is a Liverpool fan. And obviously a lot of people disagreed. Are you part of you being a Liverpool fan? Because, you support Wimbledon, a League Two club now. So do you have a Premier League club, and would it be Liverpool?
Don't even start with all that. Do you have a Premier League club? That is not even... If there's any realistic possibility of your two teams playing each other in cup competitions, then you cannot... You just can't go down that road. I'm disappointed that you've even mentioned it. With Liverpool, I grew up in London in the 80s, right? The late 80s, and I was a Wimbledon fan. That was deeply unfashionable. And everyone on the estate I lived on either supported Chelsea or Liverpool. So there, as much as Liverpool had a really long fallow period, there was always that. I've got all my mates on my lads' WhatsApp group support Liverpool, and you can't have a rational debate. You can't have a rational debate with Liverpool fans at the best of times, but not when it's 5-1. So it may be just a personal thing. I do agree with what Mark's saying about that it does mean something in the city. There's something about Liverpool, and there's also something about Newcastle as well. I did a tour show in Newcastle, and I had a 5 p.m. start, and Newcastle won, like the final whistle blew 5 minutes before my show. Best show I've ever done in my life. The Geordies, it was like they'd won the World Cup. I think they'd been beaten Brighton 2-1 at home, but... They were delirious.
One more thing before we move on. Trent Alexander-Arnold has won every trophy available to him now. They won the FA Cup last week. He's won the Champions League, the Super Cup, the Club World Cup, the Premier League, the League Cup, and as I say, the FA Cup. He's 23. Mark, what had you achieved at 23?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because I was quite a high achiever. I left school at 16, and I used the time available to me really, really wisely. I went to the one pub in Swanley called the Woodman every day and drank beer and played darts. And my ambition, I used to, on a Friday night, that was the big night, and I used to get there really early, and I used to count the number of beers I could drink, and I got to 8 pints, and my ambition was to get to 9 pints. And I sometimes would not go drinking for 3 nights in preparation, because I'm aware that you don't achieve anything in life without being dedicated. And I would sort of maybe not even eat as much to leave plenty of room. I never, ever got to my 9th pint. But I like to think that the thrill is in the chase. And I wasn't even 23. So
impressive.
Alexander,
very
Ryan,
impressive.
23. I was only 19.
Jeff, he's like the Novak Djokovic of Swanley, isn't he?
Well, I mean, my achievement comes from a sort of similar world in a way. I once won a lime pickle eating competition at the Chutney Raj in Wimbledon. And I had a unique and a sort of spectacular ability to just eat lime pickle. And it won me respect within the group, but then I'm salivating even thinking about it. But I think it did bad stuff to my insides. I think I've suffered from that in later years. But what happened was then I got the worst case of the hiccups. So it was like night and day, the glory of winning the competition and then the disgrace, because you can't take anyone seriously who's got the hiccups. Barack Obama could be sitting next to me right now, and if he had the hiccups and a small stain on his shirt, I think, you're nothing, mate.
Yeah. Oh, what? That'd be a brilliant speech. Where history would be different. Can we reshape America? Yes, we can. How much lime pickle? What are the quantities?
We're talking, so the you know the dish that it would come in for the poppadoms. We're talking most of one of those. It wasn't
That's
good.
A lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah. They don't see the suffering though, do they, Jeff? That's the point.
Because the problem is you get your chili eating guys who get a lot of respect, but lime pickle is combining the acidity and the chili, and that's why I think for me it's the sort of pinnacle of the game.
All right. Meanwhile, about £100 million further down the league, the battle for the top four will go to the final day, but only just. After last week's mauling of Arsenal in the North London derby, Spurs consolidated their hold on the final Champions League place with a workmanlike 1-0 victory over Burnley. And the next evening, Arsenal lost to Newcastle and are now relying on a miracle from Norwich. Hey, if the UK can come second in the Eurovision Song Contest, Norwich can beat Tottenham. Mark, do you think Arsenal fans moan too much? Is that the general feeling?
No, I think they don't moan enough. I think that the great entertainment that Arsenal have given us is the Arsenal fans thing. It must be the most popular television show in the world. I should think the Super Bowl comes a very, very distant second next to people watching the people outside the Emirates once every couple of weeks going, I'm sick of it! I've had enough! I can't stand any more of it! It's done me head in! It's fantastic.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying
it. And we draw against Southampton! It's wonderful.
It is entertainment for everyone else. Arsenal fans, I believe, don't find it quite as entertaining. Antonio Conte had some advice, Jeff, for Mikel Arteta. He said he maybe should moan a little less. I've been doing this for a long time. If he doesn't want to take my advice, he doesn't have to. I mean, it's outstanding passive-aggressive behaviour, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the moaning thing is one thing, but don't give up all hope here, because Spurs going to Norwich and losing would be the most Spursy thing ever. I mean, in a long and distinguished line of Spursy stuff. So I think, there's the chance to make Champions League football. Yeah, that happens sometimes. But this is a one-off opportunity to do something special that will never be topped in terms of pure Spursiness. I think, you know, if they were to be like 2-0 up at half-time and lose 3-2, then they could go on an open-top Spursy bus parade.
which would break down,
and then they'd get, you know, presented with a Spursy trophy by Erik Thorsvedt or one of those sort of epically Spursy players from the past. I just wouldn't rule it out.
Oh, yeah.
No,
Yeah, and it would be in a brilliant. It would be because Harry Kane tripped up, got a bang on the head, saw Delia Smith, thought he was a Norwich player by mistake, and scored a fantastic hat trick of own goals.
Easy mistake.
It'd be something
to make.
Like that.
Yeah. Easy mistake to make. By the way, when Spurs played Burnley, there was a ridiculous handball. I think we can have a look at it now. This is Ashley Barnes, who I've got to say is not my favourite player. There he is. And that, apparently, is a handball. Mark, do you think players... I mean, players have just got to keep their hands by their sides. Would it be easier to just play in straight jackets, perhaps?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of all that, really. Because it's... Well, it's not getting to the point. It probably has got to the point where you can aim at a player's... Is that a ridiculous thing
to say?
No,
that you could, that's what people do.
That could happen now? Yeah. So... I would think that that's... So it's just daft. And I know it's a very sort of subjective thing and, oh, was it deliberate and all that, but no, you can't give... I know I've even at points when Palace have sort of been given a penalty for something daft, there's a bit of me that feels a little bit grubby. I'll get over it fairly quickly. But I do sometimes think, oh, don't. Yeah, it makes a mockery of the game once you're just doing that. And, you know, I don't want to sound like an old man, but I know I am.
No, it's fair enough. I mean, I think it's fair to say that maybe they should replay the game and maybe have a rethink about the whole thing. I'm not saying that because I'm an Arsenal fan. Obviously, the one that... Harry Kane scored the penalty. Jeff, it's the 21st penalty in a row that he scored.
Yeah.
Is there something slightly ironic about an Englishman being one of the best penalty takers in the world?
Well, yeah, I mean, there have been questions over his Englishness as a consequence of this. And I think that those questions would be valid if it wasn't for one really good bit of evidence that he's English, which is his face. I mean, he's got one of the most English faces you've ever seen. If you stick a tin hat on that and a woodbine and put it in the trenches at Passchendaele, you'll see that this guy's English, you know. But
the voice as well, though, Jeff, wouldn't it? You know? Well, you know, we're just happy to have made another 50 yards advance towards Belgium.
Yes.
I hope it keeps going, continues.
Yeah, he's just got a real sort of like squaddy feel about him. And like the best of our esteemed military, Stoney, he gets on with it with a minimum of fuss.
He does. And we'd have won the Christmas Day game in the trenches, wouldn't we? Let's be fair. that's it. We would. Anyway, that's it for part one. When we return, we'll be heading down to the foot of the Premier League and we'll be taking a walk down Wembley Way. See you in a bit. Part two of the Football's On with disgraced former banking executive Mark Steele and Ice Road trucker Jeff Norcott. Huge news on Monday when 17-year-old Jake Daniels of Blackpool came out as gay. He is the first professional footballer in this country to do so, and his announcement garnered widespread support from all parts of the game. We just wanted to add our congratulations and best wishes to Jake. And with the World Cup coming up in Qatar, a country not known for its tolerance of homosexuality, maybe Gareth Southgate should pick him for England just to spite them.
Yes.
Anyway, down at the foot of the Premier League, it's also still all to play for on the final day of the season as Leeds, Burnley and possibly Everton will battle it out to avoid the dreaded drop. Leeds look in deep trouble with their ever-growing injury list and their goal difference of minus 245. They've also accumulated 100 yellow cards, which is an all-time Premier League record. Mark, it's surprising to think they've had more yellow cards than the Don Revy team of the 70s, until you remember that you only got a yellow card in the 70s if the recipient of the foul needed a visit to A&E.
No, it was like that. I was watching an old West Ham-Chelsea game from about 1977, and I can't remember who the players involved were, but one of the West Ham players just absolutely stamped on a Chelsea player's leg. He was in absolute agony and he was finished and had to go off. And then eventually a yellow card was given. I think the player was booked and then the ref booked the wrong person who'd been nowhere near it. And it was such a brilliant... It was such a brilliant little bit of 1970s football. Yeah. But yeah, now you'd be banned for life and all that, you know. So yeah. I mean, I don't know how many cards did Don Revy get? I mean, Brenda used to come on with a rifle and that, didn't he?
I believe so.
You could let a panther loose. Oh, and the panther's eaten three of the defenders and the ref's gone and had a word, and if that happens again, that could be a booking.
Yeah. No, it's a different game. It is a different game. It is the worst in the Premier League. Derby in 1999, 2000 got 93 and Sunderland in 14-15 got 94. Jeff, is it the way Leeds play, a sort of high-risk, high-reward type of football? Although, they've obviously, if they're going to get relegated, it doesn't seem like there's been much of a reward.
Well, I would say that I think in Wimbledon's first season in the top flight, not obviously not the Premier League, but in 86-87, I always remember that we had six red cards and an undisclosed number of yellow cards, which I just thought...
proud of that as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, violence is a form of entertainment. We forget this. But I do think that with this Premier League season, it going down to the final day is great for relegation. It's better for relegation because you have... Obviously, you have your twists. There'll be a lot of twists. But it's when they go to another ground. I don't know why that's so exciting. They say, oh, there's been a development at Upton Park. Well, it never gets called a development. What they mean is a goal, really. There's been a development at Turf Moor. There's been a development at Elland Road. And then what you see is mass breakouts of sort of schadenfreude because there's people in another place who'll be watching one thing, who'll be cheering at the misfortune of their rivals. And I think that really, you know, it's like batting out for a draw in Test cricket. Winning trophies, it's almost, that happiness is surreal. We don't really know how to deal with it. But avoiding catastrophe, that's Dunkirk. That's that spirit. I think that there's something about the sort of British psyche that really, in some ways, gets more about a narrow escape.
Well, I think there's something in that, Jeff, actually. Jesse March, Mark, the Leeds manager, he often looks like he's going to burst into tears. is it a constant pressure to think of having to say defence instead of defence? It's just in his head. It's not overtime, it's extra time.
It's possible. I can't over. I think Jeff's on. So they should, with 2 minutes to go on the last day, go, there's been a development at Villa Park. And they go over there and there's a bloke building a block of flats. Yes, he does. It's a very strange thing that Leeds did. I suppose, you know, if they get away with it, then it'll be sort of hailed as a great master stroke by the Leeds board. But it's a very, I don't know. He was fun, wouldn't he, Bielsa?
He was.
I mean, I don't know if he was much fun if you were a Leeds fan and he would just go, oh, we're playing against Manchester City. All just run up the front. what's the goalkeeper doing in Italian? What's the goalkeeper doing in his box? Up the front. Not at the end, from the start. But it was all brilliant fun. Everybody loved him. And a terrible shame to sack people. You shouldn't sack people just because they're getting the team relegated if they're fun.
Yes. Well, next time I meet the Leeds chairman, I'll pass that on. But it was fun. Watford lost at home again at the weekend. They've lost about 15 home games this season. They've let in 46 goals at Vicarage Road. Jeff, it's not exactly Fortress Vicarage Road, is it? Although a road with a vicarage doesn't really sound that fortressy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're talking to the guy. We didn't win a game from early December, so I'm not going to sit here and start spouting off about the problems at Watford. We took the lead in like 11 games, which we lost. It's just a sad thing with the culture. And you go there as fans. I mean, the level of belief where those fans that went every single game, you know, those Watford fans that are still going, it should be the opposite. The fans should kind of go on the pitch and do a lap of honour for themselves, and the players should have to go in the stands, just clap them off. I mean,
for watching us.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. At that point, when a team are playing that badly, you just realise, I just don't have anything else to do with my Saturday afternoons, because that's the only explanation for being there.
Incidentally, Watford lost 5-1
at home.
Two of Leicester's goals were scored by the evergreen Jamie Vardy, who, aged 35 years and 124 days, becomes the second oldest player in Premier League history to score a brace in back-to-back appearances in the competition. Mark, I imagine he's just happy to be out of the house for a couple of hours, isn't he? What's going on?
I think he probably is.
That's all we'll say.
I was at the game where Watford got relegated because it was at Selhurst Park. And the fans, I know it's a cliche, but the fans were, the Watford fans were full of beans. They were, you know, they knew they were getting relegated and stuff. And because it, Roy Hodgson was the manager, and at the end, bless him, it was such a Roy Hodgson thing, because, of course, the Palace fans all cheered and cheered and cheered, and at the end of the game, he walked down, he didn't do a lap of honour, as some people have said, but he walked from his little box down towards the tunnel, stood there waving to all the Palace fans, left. Completely ignored the Watford ones.
Yeah.
I thought, oh no. I mean, if it had been anyone else, there'd have been uproar, but I think the Watford fans probably are aware that he just forgot.
He's lasted longer than most Watford managers, to be fair. As for Everton, Jeff, they continued to shoot themselves in the foot. They had two sent off on Sunday against Brentford. Is Frank Lampard getting them too wound up? Will they have any hair left at the end of the next season?
I mean, this does feel like really the sort of breaking point for whether or not Lampard has a managerial career at that level. I mean, I just feel like Everton will survive. I don't know if you remember, it was back in the mid-90s. They were went into the last day of the season needing to win, and they were 2-0 down against Wimbledon. And Hans Seegers definitely made every effort he could to save those goals. No shade thrown there. And just put there were
Hans knees, bumps of daisy.
Yeah, it was a bit of that. And then, yeah, there were a lot of developments at Goodison Park in the second half.
Well, you can watch all the developments on the last day of the Premier League season unfold on BT Sports Score from 3:30 on Sunday afternoon. Now, the men's and women's FA Cup finals both took place at Wembley this weekend and were played between the same teams that played in the respective League Cup finals. That's the first time that's ever happened for the men and women in the same season. That's possibly the nerdiest fact I've ever read out on this show. I didn't know this, by the way. We have a researcher who comes up with that stuff. Chelsea won the women's FA Cup on Sunday, beating Man City 3-2. That is the double for Emma Hayes and Chelsea. After the game, she was asked about her future and she said, "I'm not talking about my future, you are. I'm talking about going off with my team and having a long, strong drink. The season's over, I'm wanting to be carried home." Mark, those evenings never end well, do they?
No, that's, yeah. Well, that's proper. No, I suppose as women's football sort of, it's sort of going through a period of like the culture of it is got to reach 1980, I suppose. No, that'd be that. And then it'll be an open top bus where they're all a bit Freddie Flint.
And then, Emma Hayes going like that at the doing the Gazza from 91.
In the men's competition, Liverpool beat Chelsea on penalties. There was controversy before the game when Chelsea played in their yellow away kit. Both coaches turned up in tracksuits and baseball caps, and some of the Liverpool fans booed Prince William. Mark, let's start with Prince William. I know you're possibly the biggest royalist we've ever had on the show and also distantly related, as it turns out. Do you think they were booing him because he's a Villa fan?
Well, closely related. Speaking as someone who's 11th in line to the throne, I feel I have a bit of inside knowledge on this. I don't think they were booing him because he's a Villa fan. I mean, how many people boo? Isn't this a story that they don't think many people
I can hear it on the TV.
Right. Right. Well, you know, they booed him because they don't, I don't know, they don't like the royal family. They don't like the idea that the royal family have cup final tickets or, I don't know. It's probably not the worst thing that's happened to in the history of the royal family, you know, given that the royal family has been in the cause of wars with Spain in the 16th century and God knows
they
what.
They weren't booing for that, you're right. You
know, royal families around the world. I don't suppose the Russian royal family of, 1917 would have thought, cool. Phew, at least we're not getting booed at Wembley.
Yeah, fair point. Jeff, I know you were sort of upset about the lack of tradition. I mean, the managers, they usually wear suits on cup final day, but track suits are comfortable, aren't you? When you get to a certain age, comfort's key.
Yeah, but the tradition is everything. I mean, it was happening before the Premier League season finished. I mean, at one point, I think they said, "Oh, we got goal news from Bramall Lane during the game on Five Live." That shouldn't be happening, and it just weird kickoff time, which meant that as it went to extra time and penalties, I was sitting there waiting to do a tour show, thinking, "Well, this isn't going to play out well." Yeah. The tracksuits. I've got to say, for me, the worst moment of all was when, and this is obviously a club thing with Liverpool at the moment, but it's when I saw thousands of grown men singing along to "One Kiss Is All It Takes" by Dua Lipa. I I don't feel comfortable with that. It's just a very weird song to have become a football hit, like a sort of kind of EDM club vibes at Wembley. I suppose it's that point where I realise, I am solidly 45 years old because I don't like anything that's happening here. I think cup final, it exists.
It exists. You sound like my dad.
I don't like anything that's happened. And I think with the booing of the royal family, look, we know with the Liverpool fans, there's a brand to being a Liverpool fan. It's Scouse, not English, and all this business. And fair enough, but I would just love to see video footage of all the Liverpool fans that booed during Euros last year when we beat Germany. I wonder if they were not feeling patriotic then. I just fine if you're going to be kind of Scouse, not English, but you've got to follow through with it and you've got to Brexit from England.
All right, well,
and you can have their own I should team. Say you can see Jeff in his latest tour show, I don't like anything that's happening here around the country. I mean,
there were a number of comics in that situation, Jeff. I was exactly as I was in where were
I was doing a tour show in Huntingdon.
Right, I saw various people, other comics, the same thing. I was in Folkestone, and it was about 10 to 8 when it finished, wasn't it? And I'm sort of having to get ready for my show and doing all my, you know, we all got our own little routines, and with a laptop in the corner watching the penalties, and that's not fair. And that's all because of the change in times. But it's just me. They don't think a comic.
They don't. And what you could see was that when they did arrive, I could see that there'd been a lot of mini domestics among the couples. About when they lived there. Either the guys that were there for the start of the show that had lost the argument. Yeah. or there were people that were just arriving surreptitiously 10 minutes in and then their wives did like... And look, women love football too, but I'm just talking about the broad sweep of sort of gender approaches to socialising versus the importance of football. Women are great.
Well, I was, and I'm with you here, Jeff, completely. When Palace got to the cup final 6 years ago now, then to me, to be part of a thing that I'd sort of seen all them times and stuff and abide with me and all that, and I think I was the only person singing it while everyone else was, I don't know, doing whatever they were doing. And I thought, don't spoil it. We've waited 100,000 years. I know we've been there once before, but... Oh, this is our chance to sing Abide With Me. I don't spoil it by singing something by the Chemical Brothers or something.
I think there is too much music at Wembley generally, to be honest with you. They play dance music up until the very kickoff. We talked about this the other week. Another curious fact is this was Mason Mount's sixth Wembley final defeat. Jeff, if you're sitting in the dressing room waiting for kickoff and he walks in going, "Hey lads, how's it going?" Would you be like, "Oh, what's he doing here? I thought we were going to tell him that he moved it back to Cardiff."
Well, they should have a statue to him outside Wembley, Mount Mason, and just a sort of like a kind of in honour of all the people that have got a really terrible record at one particular thing.
What about? I mean, I know what you mean about the kickoffs and everything, but there's something about a game finishing at sort of 11 o'clock at night. I quite like, really. It's just, you know, a bit of excitement, Mark.
But that's because you're young and funky, Ian. You know, I'm an old stick in the mud, mate.
Yeah, look at you. Ian Kendrick Lamar Stone.
Thank you. And you can see that tour show around the country. Now, I should mention that The Football's On is not just a visual feast for the eyes. No, we have a podcast version of this show, so the ears are looked after as well. It's called The Football's On and On, and it's available on all the usual podcast platforms. Before we go to the break, a quick game of Who Am I? This is where I give out some clues and the panellists have to guess who I'm talking about. So, the clues. I was born June 1966, played for 3 clubs in my home country, 3 in Germany, 1 in England and 1 in Qatar. I won 3 league titles in my home country, but the closest I came to a trophy in England was a runner-up in the League Cup in 1996. I won Leeds Player of the Year and Goal of the Season during my 2 years in England. And I also won the Bundesliga Golden Boot twice. And internationally, I played 59 times for my country, scoring 29 goals. However, I couldn't win any trophies, finishing as a runner-up in the Africa Cup of Nations in 1992. Who am I? We will tell you after the break, when we'll also talk about strange things being thrown onto the pitch and going over what happened in the National League. Part 3 of The Football Zone with me, Ian Stone, the last living relative of King Hepatiti of Egypt, Mark Steele, and lead harpist in the Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, Jeff Norcott. So before the break, I asked who am I and I gave out some clues and the panellists had to guess who I was talking about. Here are the clues. I was born in June 66, played for three clubs in my home country, three in Germany, one in England and one in Qatar. I won three league titles in my home country, but the closest I came to a trophy in England was as a runner-up in the League Cup in 66. I did win Leeds Player of the Year and Goal of the Season during my 2 years in England, and I also won the Bundesliga Golden Boot twice. And internationally, I played 59 times for my country, scoring 29 goals. However, I couldn't win any trophies, finishing as a runner-up in the Africa Cup of Nations in 1992. Who am I? Mark, any idea?
Well, I thought I had an idea, but you just said that he won the League Cup in 1966, the year that he was born, which was an extraordinary
achievement. He was a very early development. 96.
But I guess that, and what I think that the biggest clue is the goal of the season and for Leeds would be Yeboah.
Yes, it would, yes. Tony Yeboah. Are you showing us the
I'm showing
photo
my workings like on Countdown. And the reason, one of the reasons I know is because I was at the game when he scored that incredible goal, which... How that crossbar didn't just snap and explode, essentially. It was such a ridiculous force.
It was. Tony Yeboah, what a great goal. Played for Saarbrücken, Frankfurt and Hamburg in Germany. And the goal of the season, as Jeff said, against Wimbledon. Now, we were talking relegation battles in part two, and there was a story this week from Nick Pope, the Burnley keeper, about when he got relegated at Charlton. And he had pigs thrown onto the pitch. Now, we looked into this and they were plastic rather than actual livestock. I'm assuming neither of you chaps have ever thrown anything on a football pitch. Jeff, have you seen anything strange thrown in the general direction of a player?
I did invade the pitch once against Aston Villa. We were 3-1 down. We scored a second. I said, if we equalise here, I'm on the pitch. I ran on the pitch and I told my son about this recently and he's six and he lost a lot of respect for me. I thought he was going to go, cheeky. I genuinely regretted telling him because I thought he was going to go, that must have been so exciting. But what happened was it was free all and then they chucked me out of the ground, of course, you know, you've got to apply the letter of the law. But because there was 4 minutes left, the gates had already opened. So I just walked back in. Oyvind Leonardsson scored a fourth.
Mark, is it really an invasion if it's just Jeff, do you think?
It was just me.
I'm trying to work out,
it was just me. Wimbledon fans, I mean, we've become more militant over the years, but back then, there was a lot of people eating Marmite sandwiches they bought from home.
I remember this. Jeff, I remember this because I remember watching that game and there was a guy with a rather tight shirt who ran on. And now I realise who
truly.
That was. Mark, flares have become popular. It all seems a bit continental to me, do you not think? No regard for health and safety.
Oh, but they're official now, aren't they? I mean, people walk round. I was watching it. What game was I watching the other day where someone, it might be the Everton game, was it? Where somebody actually walks round with an official flare. You know, that's...
An official flare?
No. With a sort of thing that sort of like lets off a bit of light, and it's you can have one of these cool teachers that goes, well, I'm not against a flare, but we can have lots of fun with that. But that's the illegality and the mischief of it is all the fun, isn't it? It's like when they put up a board. Well, you can graffiti on that if you like. No, it's no fun. Yeah. If it's on the side of Windsor Castle, it's fun. I think if it's on a board specially put there, it's not. No.
There is something in that, isn't there, really, that these things, we don't want people, we don't condone people running on the pitch. Jeff, I feel like I should wag my finger at you at this point. Just don't do that. We don't condone it. Tennis balls have also been quite popular. Did I get footballs thrown at them at Wimbledon, do you think? Probably not.
I remember one thing when we were playing Man United at Selhurst Park, one of the funniest things I've ever seen was someone blazed it over. And then within the sort of like, just literally a beat, as the ball was caught, somebody threw back a tiny replica football. And just watching Roy Keane catch it, I think it's the only time he's ever smiled.
Yes, there's actually a plaque by the stadium. This is the day that Roy Keane smiled. I remember, we all remember Luis Figo. He transferred from Barcelona to Real Madrid and then went back to play at the Nou Camp and someone threw a pig's head at him when he went to take a corner. Mark, I've often wondered whether the guy worked in a butcher's shop or whether he just purchased a pig's head with the intention of throwing it during the game.
Or he had a pig's head with him and he's thought, oh no, I was hoping to go home and drop this off, but now I've got to take it to the... And then he thought, oh, I can kill two birds with one stone here. I can get rid of the pig's head and I could make a point about my distaste for Figo. That's probably what
happened. I imagine. Jeff, toilet rolls used to be very popular, didn't they? Although I guess if it hadn't during the pandemic, yes, some enterprising fans would have collected them and sold them outside the ground.
Yeah, we were chucking paracetamol up in the air. Everything, Nintendo Switches, all the shortage products, Stoney, we used to throw them up in the air. And inflatables as well, you know, like that bit of the late 80s. I think the inflatable thing was a bit rubbish, actually, looking back at it. You know, I do tend to glorify the past, but I can remember Grimsby Town came to play us in an FA Cup fifth round game and they bought loads of inflatable haddocks because they were from Grimsby. And I sort of thought, no, you don't get to self-satirise. If there's going to be any ruthless regional stereotypes here, we're going to be doing that, okay? It's like they've nicked the joke off us.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so what would Wimbledon have in, you know, inflatable Roger Federer's or...
Yeah.
Palace would have inflatable television transmitters.
Well, once upon a time, it would have just been equity, inflatable equity in your house. I don't know how you represent that.
I was going to say, I can't imagine people would know an inflatable Roger Federer particularly. Is that Roger Federer? Oh, I see now. Oh, okay. In the National League, Stockport County came through a tough test against Halifax Town to automatically gain promotion back into the Football League. Ryan Reynolds Wrexham, I love saying that, Ryan Reynolds Wrexham will have to battle it out in the playoffs. Jeff, you may well be going to Stockport next season. Does that prospect get the blood pumping?
I think, what is it? We're playing Harrogate. We're playing Harrogate. It can't, that's Stockport. Nice. Stockport got pedigree, mate, compared to Harrogate. No offence to Harrogate. Well, some offence to Harrogate, clearly. But the Ollie Palmer, so there's a bit of a narrative between Wimbledon and Wrexham, was that we sold in the middle of the season Ollie Palmer to Wrexham for £350,000 because the club was saying, well, look, you know, we've got to pay off this debt for the club. This is good business sense. And then we just didn't score again for the rest of the season. So I'm not sure it was good business sense. He was exactly the kind of striker you want at Wimbledon. 6'2". He had a really impressive beard. I mean, if you'd have put him with his beard with our new manager, Johnny Jackson, I mean, the testosterone levels would have been off the chart.
You do seem to be getting plenty of enjoyment at Wimbledon from stuff that other people don't really notice.
Well, when you play that badly, you really have to start looking. You have to take in a panoramic view of what football is.
Take your pleasure where you can get it. I get that.
I'm a big... I've got to talk about Stockport a bit because I'm a big fan of Stockport for a number of reasons. I did one of my in-town shows there on the radio about Stockport and I thought it was just a fantastic place for so many reasons. There's a hat museum, which is my favourite of museums. There's a famous bus route there called the 192.
We all know that.
It's famous. No, anyone from Stockport knows the 192 because it's crazy. It comes back from Manchester and everyone on it is just like a bit crazy and stuff. And I put a thing on I put a thing on Twitter about, does anyone know about the 192 bus route? And straight away someone replied, is that the one where there was a bloke with no shirt who always got on with a rabbit? And and immediately someone replied, of course, that was the driver. And it was just, it's really well done. And it's just something. Also, there's a quiz question that you've probably used at some point, which club is closest to the Mersey, which is Stockport.
Really?
And yeah. Also, because I went to Stockport's ground 20 years ago because Palace had to beat Stockport and hope other results went right to not get relegated into what is now League One. And we scored 3 minutes from the end with a goal that had a massive handball in the build-up and so stayed up. And Stockport were safe at the time. And as I sort of walked off to meet the people I was going to meet, I remember this so clearly. I stood at this set of traffic lights and this car pulled up and the window went down. And this woman went, I hope you're relegated next season, she said. And then I hope you keep getting relegated so many times that you end up in the Scottish League. And then she just drove off. And well, I thought, bless her for that, especially as they continued to get relegated after that and very nearly ended up in the Scottish League.
Well, you won't be seeing Stockport in the National League playoffs, but we will be showing them here on BT Sport on Monday and Tuesday next week. Now it's time for our quiz. Three questions on the weekend's football, another two on a subject chosen by our guests. We've made things a little bit easier by making some of the questions multiple choice. Last week, Mark Simmons beat Reece James 2-1 without essentially knowing any of the answers. Mark, you can go first. Leeds...
Oh, I'm terrible.
No,
at these.
You know what? Right. It's no pressure. Leeds reached 100 yellow cards in a single Premier League season following their draw with Brighton on Sunday. But which player holds the record for most yellows in the competition's history? Is it Wayne Rooney, Lee Catamole, Lee Bowyer or Gareth Barry?
Right. Well, the obvious one to think of would be Bowyer because you associate him with just getting... But he probably got sent off within the first minute of quite a lot of games, so that wouldn't give him a chance to get yellow cards. But I would think... I mean, Barry might be... But it'd be a defender,
played a
it?
Long time.
Yeah. It wouldn't be. Who's the first one
Wayne
you said?
Rooney.
No, it wouldn't be Rooney. So it's Barry.
You're having Barry, and you're right. Gareth Barry received 123 yellow cards. Rooney got 102. Right. Bowyer got 99. Nice, right. Very good.
Bad,
all right, Spurs kept their Champions League qualification dreams alive. Well, more than alive now, with a 1-0 win over Burnley, courtesy of a Harry Kane penalty. He's now scored 182 Premier League goals. How many have been penalties? 24, 26, 28 or 30? Pure guess.
Oh, that's just a guess, isn't it? A lot of these questions are so impossible. How many throw-ins did Stevenage take in the 1999-2000 season? 20.
He got it right again. 28. Well done. Outstanding football knowledge. Question three. Right. Now, we mentioned Jamie Vardy, 35 years and 124 days. The second oldest player in the Premier League history to score a brace in back-to-back appearances in the competition. Who is the oldest? Is it Ryan Giggs, Yuri Djorkaeff?
Ah, let me guess before you... All right,
go on.
Sorry.
It's Ryan Giggs, Yuri Djorkaeff, Alan Shearer or Teddy Sheringham? Giggs, Djorkaeff, Shearer or Sheringham? Mark?
Right, I'm going to say Sheringham because he played... quite a bit after that age, didn't he? So I think that would give him more chance. So
it's not, though. It's Yuri Djorkaeff.
I would have said Djorkaeff because it was such a weird guy to be in that list.
Well, when...
Oh, yeah, good point. Yes,
When it comes to your questions, Jeff, you can have a go. Right now, it's Mark's turn. So, Mark, we've got chosen topics now. Do you want FA Cup finals or Eurovision?
Well, obviously FA Cup finals. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, FA Cup finals. Here we are. Stan Mortensen scored the only ever FA Cup final hat-trick in 1953. But which team did he score it for?
Bolton.
It was Blackpool, Mark. Yes, it was Blackpool against Bolton.
I'm standing in absolute shame. You've no idea. Oh, you think I'm joking? I'm not. That is shames me.
Well, it's...
That shames me more than if I didn't know the names of my own children.
And to think both of you were at the game. I mean, come on, guys.
Yes, I took my grandchildren. It was a very exciting afternoon. Okay, so Mark's still on 2 out of 4. Second question. Until 1998, if the final finished as a draw, the game would go to a replay. What year was the last FA Cup final replay?
Brilliant question. I can't imagine, I can't think that there was one after the United Palace replay in 1990. I'm trying to think if there was one. Ah, yes, there was. Arsenal-Sheffield Wednesday. That was after
it
that,
was.
Wasn't it?
What year?
So that was 93.
It was 1993. Very, very good. The game finished 1-1 with Arsenal winning 2-1 after extra time in the replay. And Mark scores 3 out of 5. I'm not shameful at all, Mark, to be honest with you. It's very, very good. Okay, after the break, it's the turn of Jeff Norcott. We'll be back in a bit when we'll be taking issue with the statue. Part four of the football's on. Now it's Jeff Norcott's turn to have a go at the quiz. In part three, Mark scored 3 out of 5. Jeff, big hill to climb.
Yeah, I mean, I was going back to the Gareth Barry one. You did say to him, oh, he was a defender. Like, so I hope I get at least one mega clue like that.
Well, okay, let's see how it goes. Jeff, the National League finished its regular season on Sunday with the playoffs to come. How many teams compete in the National League playoffs? Is it 8, 6, 4, or 3?
I thought it was 2. I was so confident waiting for 2 to come up. It's 4.
No, it's 6.
Damn it!
6 teams compete in the National League playoffs. Sorry about that. That's Jeff. Didn't get a point there. Okay, question 2. As we mentioned, Leeds have the worst disciplinary record in the league with a total of 103 cards, 100 yellows and 3 reds. Who has the best? Is it Man City, Liverpool, Norwich or West Ham?
Well, I mean, it could be Norwich in a way, just because how meekly they've rolled over. You don't sense any sort of resistance there. Man City and Liverpool, both big clubs, as we all know, that they do tend to get favoured. I'll go Liverpool.
You should have gone Man City, mate. 42 yellows and 2 red cards. Question 3. Mark, you're looking good. Chelsea women did the domestic double on Sunday, beating Man City 3-2 after extra time, with Sam Kerr scoring the winner. How many of the goal scorers were English? Was it 0, 1, 2 or 3?
Well, I mean, I know this is obviously the women's branch of football, but it's still Chelsea. So in that case, I'm thinking, just to make a jibe at Chelsea, and not because I necessarily think it's true, 0.
Yep. Well, it's 0 for Chelsea, but 1 for Manchester City.
Sorry, Stoney, I don't think you were quite clear in that question there. And I think for the...
Don't you think that, Jeff?
The televisual jeopardy, you should probably give me the point and we roll on.
hang on. I'm getting a directive from my producer. No, I can't tell him that. It's live telly. Lauren Hemp scored for Manchester City's 1. City's 2nd was scored by the Australian... Hayley Rasso.
Yeah, well, I know all this. Obviously, I know all this, but I was given the clear impression that we were talking about Chelsea goal scorers.
You're the equivalent now of a team surrounding the ref
after he's clearly made his decision.
He's looked at the VAR.
It's what happens when you have a lack of ability. You have to intimidate.
Anyway, Sam Kerr, who's Australian, and Aaron Cuthbert, who's Scottish, scored. Sorry, Jeff. So the chosen topic you've gone for then, you've been given, because Mark went for FA Cup finals and shamed himself with one of the questions, as he said. So you, Jeff, have Eurovision, which incidentally, by the way, the FA Cup final only finished 10 minutes before that started. Yeah. So, you know, there was that crossover there as well. So let's have a couple of questions on Eurovision. Jeff, who is the only country to win both Eurovision and a major international tournament in the same year?
A major international football tournament?
Yes.
Men or the women's game?
Men, in this case.
Spain?
No, it's Italy. It was 2021.
That
last
was the other
year.
One. That was the other one. The same.
And Maneskin, I think that's how you said it, won with the song that had a swear word in it that slipped past the organisers. The only thing, to be honest, that slipped past the organisers that
Which
evening.
One was it?
Unlucky Jeff. The last time the UK won Eurovision was in 1997, a barren 25 years of follow, but which English football club has had to wait the longest between title wins?
Well, can I say Katrina and the Waves, which was the answer that I would have loved to have given, if we're talking about proper Eurovision. This is nothing to do with Eurovision. It's basically saying a thing happened in a year. Oh, meanwhile, what other thing happened in that year? What other team have had the longest wait between football titles? Royal Fusiliers.
Unlucky. It's Blackburn Rovers.
Oh, do you know what I was actually going to say? Blackburn Rovers. Genuinely was going to say that. But I had to try and be funny, didn't I? This is what my therapist says.
I know. He's trying to make up for question time. That's what it is.
Comedian.
Don't take those Twitter things personally. Jeff got 0 out of 5. Mark, a 3-0. Stroll in the park for you.
Yeah.
You sound delighted, well, I must say.
Well, I was, no. But I'm a bit like Guardiola. Yeah, 1-3-0, should have been 4-0.
Well, while we're on the subject of Manchester City, a statue of Sergio Aguero was unveiled outside the Etihad. People who saw it said it was almost like you were in the same room as Aguero, except that he's taller and silver and looks like someone else. But aside from that, it's uncanny. Jeff, if they ever unveil a statue of you somewhere, I don't know, outside Conservative central office, perhaps.
Yeah.
And it looks nothing like you. You'd have to say something, right?
I think I like the iconic nature of it. And you know, at New Palais Lane, we've got our own stadium. And we've got loads of images of, like Vinnie Jones brandishing his FA Cup final winner's medal. We've got Lyle Taylor after we beat Plymouth in the League Two playoff final. And I think, you know, given we only won 6 games last season, I think we could immortalise all 6 of those games and still have space, sadly.
Well, have you got any statues outside Palace, outside Sellers Park, Mark?
We've got Sainsbury's, which does a job, doesn't it?
Is it in bronze?
See, not only is it, it's a Sainsbury's. It's a Sainsbury's that's also a sort of piece of cubist art and does actually represent our 1-0 win over West Ham at Cardiff in a playoff final in 2004. But also, you can get your vegetables and a Scotch egg there, so it's sort of functional as well.
You can't do that with your Sergio Aguero. Tony Cruz.
No.
Tony Cruz
exactly.
was on Twitter
exactly.
saying that wasn't him, by the way. I think that's pretty funny.
Exactly. You try getting any onions out of Aguero's statue.
Arsenal got a few. Arsenal got Ken Fryer as a boy, Herbert Chapman, Thierry Henry, Tony Adams and Dennis Bergkamp. I quite like a statue outside, but they all look pretty much like the people that they're meant to. It sort of reminds me, Jeff, of the Great Yarmouth Waxwork Museum. I don't know if you ever went there on tour in the past.
Yes, I mean, the thing about it is like all art, it's trying to remind you of a moment. Does it look anything like Sergio Aguero? No, it doesn't. But Picasso, I mean, what was all that about, either? Didn't look like anything.
No, exactly. We're doing Nelson's column. Probably Nelson looked
nothing
like that.
Yeah, he was
like
nowhere near that at all.
Who can see 7 foot?
You know, but it doesn't matter, does it? What's the matter with them, bloody entitled?
All right, let's do.
You're lucky to have someone that you've got a statue of.
All right, let's do This Week in History. Before we go, a couple of nice examples. May the 18th, 1970. Bobby Moore and Bobby Charlton went shopping in Colombia. I'll be honest, I just like saying that sentence. And Bobby Moore was arrested because they thought he'd stolen a bracelet. Mark, do you have vague recollection of this? I mean, we were a similar age, maybe about 7, 8, 9 years old. And it was a big, and he was kept in jail,
wasn't he,
for a little while?
Yes, I do. It was a massive, massive story. Enough that it had an impact on me that I still remember. And it was such a Bobby Moore-y sort of thing to happen, West Ham and all that. And one of the most loved sort of sports people of history in Britain. And, you know, that probably added to the sort of aura around him in a way, you know, falsely accused of nicking some jewellery in Colombia.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing a footballer could have done in Colombia, to be fair.
No, exactly. You know. So, it was all, I mean, it probably was a nuisance at the time, but it's all added to it. And there will be people now who sort of go, we'd have won that World Cup if it weren't for that.
It was on his mind, wasn't it, in the quarterfinal against Germany. That's the problem.
Yeah, the impending trial, that's the trouble, yeah.
Yes, and on exactly the same day... On exactly the same day, 10 years earlier, Real Madrid 7, Eintracht Frankfurt 3 in the European Cup final at Hampden Park, with an official attendance, Jeff, of 127,621 people, including a young Alex Ferguson. I can't imagine a young Alex Ferguson, Jeff.
Well, I suppose when he went to get his half-time refreshments and the... And the chips were cold. I bet he gave him a piece of his mind, didn't he? Young 9-year-old Ferguson, given the chip seller the hairdryer treatment.
Would have warmed him up. wouldn't it? Would have warmed up the chips.
It would have warmed up the chips. I mean, that is, it does seem odd that there was that game then. How many people flew over, or was that just all Glaswegians? What an affair!
I don't know.
I think that is interesting. Would they? Because it wouldn't have been possible for all those people to have come over from Spain.
No, mainly Glaswegians. I haven't ever seen a breakdown of the demographics of the crowd, but I'd imagine it was a lot of people from very close to the ground.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we sorted that out. That's it for the show. Thanks to base jumping enthusiast Mark Steele and medieval reenactment enthusiast Jeff Norcott. I'm Ian Stone. Have a good week.